Billiken fans, welcome back. It's Zach Miller and Peter Hale. It's the Midtown Madness podcast. Before we get going, thank you so much for listening. If you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button. It helps the channel out a ton. Even if you don't watch it there, even if you don't even have a YouTube account, or you don't think you have a YouTube account, go ahead and just go over there and subscribe. It's season four. God willing, once again, the Midtown Madness podcast is brought to you by Two Men in a Garden. Pete, I cannot tell you enough how great Cinco de Mayo was with Two Men in a Garden. It really made my Cinco de Mayo festivities a lot better. I hope it did for everyone else in our audience as well. We are not here to share to sell you any useless subscription service that sends you a new piece of bathroom equipment or decoration every week. Not here. We're only here about Two Men in a Garden salsa. It's local, tastes amazing. They've got all the flavors to suit your individual salsa preferences. You can pick up their many products at any local grocery store or online at twomeninagarden.com, which, if you're particular about your salsa like I am, that's where you want to head to get your fix. Follow them on social media at Two Men Salsa on Instagram and Twitter. Pete, I've got some good news and I've got some bad news here. I assume you'd want the bad news first so that the sweetener is the good news. Am I correct?
You are correct, Zach. Give me the bad news first.
The bad news is that a Billiken lost the Hell is Real rivalry last night between Columbus and Cincinnati. Unfortunately, Kip Keller's it was Patrick Schulte who was on the losing end of the Hell is Real rivalry. The good news, though, is that Kip Keller's on FC Cincinnati, and they won the Hell is Real rivalry game last night.
Yeah, that was a big one around here. A local group message chain with some buddies, a few of us are season ticket holders. We're all over this one. I didn't actually get to watch the game live because I had some other stuff going on last night, but it was a good time around here in Cincinnati for a lot of people, I know. And Kip Keller is quickly becoming someone the fans really appreciate here.
I think that's what we kind of knew with those dudes. Like, I think with the, and I don't know, I guess it's everybody, it's one of those things where a city takes pride in something, and then every city has it. It's like right. the wedge building that every city has, but everybody thinks it's unique. But like, I really feel like every player that comes through St. Louis University, whether it be basketball, soccer, when they play at the next level, they really become fan favorites. It's the Jordan Jets of the world, or Brian Conklin's down in Australia. I mean, he was literally known for his just brutality. Right. You know, you talk about a Kip Keller, a Patrick Schulte, they're fan favorites now. But the beauty of it is like, I feel like they're not all fan favorites for their excellence on the field. You know?
Yeah, that's like right.
They all seem to be, this university seems to produce professionals that tend to be likable.
I'll take another professional soccer player from SLU as an example, Tim Ream.
Yes.
People love him at Fulham, love him. His work off the field has been tremendous. He's been a real hero for a lot of special needs kids and a lot of fans, younger fans have really latched onto him. And not only that, through the Men in Blazers network, he's kind of co-hosted a podcast periodically over there as well. And people have really gotten to know his personality that way too. So I think you're right, man. I mean, we could just come up with example after example, but SLU tends to crank out the fan favorite type of player, not always the MVP, you know, the all-star, anything like that, but players that people really like. And by the way, speaking of MVP, Schulte is really getting some serious looks from European clubs and has really made a name for himself in a very short amount of time in MLS.
By the way, speaking of fan favorites and just tireless workers, I think we got to give a shout out to Julia Martinez, who announced on Instagram kind of just, I don't know. I don't think it needed to be. I think everybody kind of understood that. I think she was going to go down the path of move on to another career, a more traditional, I guess, career. And so she is officially hanging it up. as a basketball player. Congratulations to her on an incredible career and being just an outstanding representative of us, I think, as alumni, and I think, you know, Billiken fans everywhere.
Yeah, and she's physical therapy too, right? I mean, that's a tough program at SLU. It's a program that SLU's really known for. And to come out of there, you got to be a pretty smart, hardworking person. I knew a lot of PT students when I was at SLU, and they did a lot more homework than I did. I'll put it that way.
You know, there's a reason our student basketball attendance isn't very good, and it's those organic chemistry tests.
That's right. That's right.
I got an orgo test in a month. I can't go to the game.
I didn't miss a home game in 4 years. Of course, I was working for the team, but then again, I never had a test like that to prepare for.
Pete, I if there's one thing when it comes to sports, I talked about hard workers. I love hard workers when it comes to sports because I'm not one. No, but if there's one thing about my sports watching habits that you've come to learn about me, what is it that I love to do?
That you love to do? I would say if Team USA is involved, Zach, I think you're on board for that.
No matter what the sport.
Any sport.
It does not matter. It could, if it's the poker championships, if it's billiards, and USA is playing anyone, I am all in on Team USA. I'm getting out the flag. I'm putting on a jersey. It's a whole day.
It's an Olympic year, Zach, and I'm going to challenge you with one. Dressage. If the U.S. Olympic dressage team is on, are you watching that? Are you watching the little the horses trot?
Oh, you know what? I'm all in. All right.
I appreciate your patriotism.
It. Yes.
Well, then you're going to appreciate this first story, Zach, because Sarah Adam, a SLU assistant professor of occupational therapy and occupational sciences, was named the first ever female member of the U.S. Paralympic wheelchair rugby team. This is the sport that some of you might know as murder ball, by the way, like real deal, hardcore, tough sport. And she will represent the U.S. in Paris this August, starting August 28th through September 8th. Since the sport debuted at the 2000 Paralympics in Sydney, only 5 women have competed, and she'll be the first for the U.S. She started playing back in 2019, made her international debut, and won gold at the Americas Championship in 2022, and then won another gold at the Parapan Olympic Games in 2023, which is the competition that secured their team a spot at the Paris Games. So the U.S. won silver in Rio in 2016 and Tokyo 2020, having last won gold in Beijing in 2008. They have medaled every time, but haven't won that gold in a while. So they're going to be going for that this year, and she's going to be a big part of that. And SLU had a nice ceremony for her. I assume she's going to have some understanding heading into the fall semester here that she's going to have a little time off at the top of the semester to go for this gold medal. But this is an awesome story. She sounds like an incredible person. If anyone knows her, by the way, personally, we would love to talk to her. Send
absolutely
her away.
We're great with Olympians.
Yes, we are. So yeah, I mean, it's an incredible story, and she seems awesome, and we're going to be rooting hard for her. And we'll keep you updated as things develop over the summer. But it sounds like she's going to Paris.
Why is sled hockey the coolest shit you've ever seen?
Oh, it's amazing.
It's so much fun. Cool.
Yeah, love it.
I love the goalies have two. There's two different kinds of goalies. Like, there's one that'll just have the pad down on the. It's so wild. It's so interesting how they've adapted hockey. I also love the boards. Like they just skate into the bench. It's pretty cool.
Right.
Also talk about things that are pretty cool on a less grand scale. Something that I'm really excited about is St. Louis University has announced a new partnership with St. Louis based clothing brand Series 6, Pete.
Yeah, really nice. I like this brand a lot, and I know them. Not just through that, but they've done partnerships with local breweries and restaurants and stuff like that as well. They're really like hyper local brand. They put out some cool stuff.
Yeah, I really like what they've done with they've really done great work with the local community, like you said. They did what's called support local, and this kind of, correct me if I'm wrong, but it it grew out of 2020, right? Mm-hmm. And so essentially they, and this is the kind of the footnote to this is, they created a bunch of shirts for businesses, for bars, and Humphreys is on here, included. So essentially what happened with Humphreys when it came back is that, there was another company. I'm not going to name the company, but they did a shirt with Humphreys. I think you can figure that out. And apparently they did not get the rights to use or the permission to use the logo in their merchandise. So it was kind of a contentious little spot there. But anyway, what this company does with the local businesses is they, as you can see on screen, if you're watching on YouTube, is they partner with them and they use their logo. They put it on a really nice t-shirt, and then portion of the proceeds go directly back to the bar or the restaurant.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're right. It came out of the pandemic when restaurants were struggling and needed some help to stay afloat. And it's just kind of stuck around because people really respond to it.
Yeah. It looks like 50% of the profit. But so what we're not necessarily looking at the drink and food side of things, but more the sports side. So let's go ahead and take a look at what they're kind of working with. And I believe I didn't know about this one, but so on their website, they don't have the licensed merchandise for the Blues, but they do have Blues inspired merchandise, as you can see on screen. So you've got just like STL in the colors of the Blues, St. Louis hockey. Whereas, you know, with a Bush in the, because they have an Anheuser-Busch sponsorship, but it's the 90s Blues design. And then they do have licensed merchandise within the Blues team store inside the arena, which thank you to, was it Patrick Carricker on Twitter that pointed that out to us?
I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. I didn't scroll down to find the actual licensed branding stuff, but, I actually have, I think my Battlehawks shirt, my Kakaw, I have a Kakaw windbreaker. And that's from Series 6, I believe. Nice. Or maybe that's from Arch Apparel. I don't know. It doesn't matter. So they did do a branding. You can get their branded stuff with City on their website. I'm going to try to zoom in here because it's kind of small. But you'll see like kind of this, Pete, kind of describe it because I'm not great at really
describing. Yeah, so they have a line that has City in big City red letters over kind of a soccer ball imprint. And then they have some really classic varsity print, arched St. Louis over the City crest. They incorporate the St. Louis City flag into a lot of the stuff here. And so you could tell like the first, 12 or so pieces that you looked at were all like official.
Yeah.
And then they have, like they do with the other sports, some that are a little more unofficial, right? It just uses the word St. Louis or St. Louis soccer that isn't officially licensed City merch. And that incorporates some different designs as well. Some of them, you've got like the skyline superimposed over like kind of the shadow of a soccer ball. And that has kind of a late 80s, early 90s kind of vibe to it. And then you've got some even more traditional like St. Louis soccer in a script that kind of looks like an old Cardinals script. And then some more, because it does seem like they do have a licensing agreement with Anheuser-Busch. There's some Budweiser and Busch stuff sort of with a soccer, an overall soccer vibe to it as well. So pretty good variety on here. I like a lot of their stuff a lot. And I imagine when the Slew collection goes live, I might have to dip into a few of these other ones as well.
Yeah, I think so. By the way, Series 6, holler at us if you want us to take a look at what we got here. We'll
kick the tires on some merch for sure.
Yes. I think what I've always really liked with these kind of smaller companies is that they really play into that everyday person. Because you're not, again, look, I'm sitting here in a basketball jersey with no sleeves underneath. Like, I'm a certain type of individual. I'm going to wear a jersey. I, I think I do okay at making it not look like I'm 12.
I mean, everybody listening to this just hit pause and went over to YouTube.
Yes, so, for sure.
Zach is just, he's driving video traffic right now.
Yes, yes, that's exactly the plan. But like, I really just like that this stuff can be snagged by anybody. Like, you're going to a game, but you're not fully in, but you want to support the team. This is the kind of place you go to.
Yeah, totally. And I think there's kind of a mix of, it's like quality gear that they put their stuff on. And, but it's also, there's a little bit of a nostalgic look to some of it as well. Like, yes. Like there was a Budweiser, like soccer ball logo that looked, yes, like something one of my uncles would be wearing in the soccer dome in 1989. Like,
oh,
I,
yeah, almost,
I feel like I've seen that before, you know, whether I actually have or not, there's something that just immediately hits a part of my brain that's like, I am familiar with this. I grew up in St. Louis. I know
this. It's like the pitchers of beer that you would get at like a bowling alley, like, yes, that plastic, like that's the same kind of,
oh man,
kind of vibe you get.
100%.
But no, what I think it's funny because when I look at merchandise, what really interests me is how well they attack or approach the line of clothes for women. Mm-hmm. I just think that's so important because there's not a lot out there. We went through that phase in what, 2000s, mid 2000s, where everything that was for women sports wise was pink.
Yes.
And now we're really, yes, getting into that sports fashion where,
right.
And it's been a while. It's nothing new, but this is important because women are now like, it's, you've got to have this. I don't know where I'm going with this. That's going to make it sound good. About women. I'm just pontificating about women.
Well, I can tell you from my experience, my wife has complained forever, you know, and we've been together for a very long time. And she's complained basically that entire time that so much of like the Cincinnati Reds merch and other stuff has never been cut for women. It's either men's or it's unisex. And back when we started dating in 2005, things were a lot bigger and boxier, like not as well made and form fitting and things like that. And she's always complained that there are cool designs that are not available in a women's cut. And she's like, I'm not wearing some big boxy thing that's made for a man. She's like, it's just like, period, not doing it. And you're right. Like, it's no longer like the condescending era of like, oh, you're a sports fan. Let's put it in pink font on a white shirt, or let's put this on a pink shirt. It's no longer that, right? Like, there are actually like women's sized clothing that they can wear out and fits them and doesn't look way different in terms of design than the men's.
Yeah. I like this stuff so much. It crosses all boundaries of type of person. And I think, you know what I'm really excited about? I'm not going to lie. I love a snapback hat. I know that shocks everybody that watches on YouTube, but, or like a trucker, a snapback trucker. And I mean, there's so many on here, different colors. Like, that is what I'm excited about. And I think there's a section of the population that doesn't love wearing brand logos.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. Like something that is a little more like, it just says St. Louis hockey, right?
Yeah.
I think there is something a little, you know, to the like the broader appeal of that. Like, how often are you going to wear some of that like straight up Blues merch?
Yeah.
To non-Blues related events, right? I mean, so there's something that you feel like a lot of this is a little more versatile in, yes, terms of where you can wear it and when.
You know, speaking of merch, Pete, there was a few little discoveries on, well, there was a message board post that detailed that the bookstore is going to move from SLU Barn, from Barnes & Noble College, to an online-only distributor for books, for the books aspect. There wasn't any, I don't think there was information on whether it would go into merch, but interesting nonetheless. And I also, because of that, discovered that there are some kind of neat little jerseys that are for sale on the bookstore website.
Yeah, baseball and softball specifically, right?
Yeah, I've got to this point. It's weird. There was a point in my life where I spent so long pining over like Nike jerseys and like wanting them to be legit, like this one or the newer ones that Rally House carried as well. But like now I look at those baseball jerseys, I'm like, they look kind of cool. I don't really need the Nike on them. Is that weird? Is that a weird progression?
I mean, if the design and quality are good, then no, it's not that weird a progression. I think the issue before is like if it wasn't the official stuff, it was just kind of like knockoff style crap, okay. Right? It wasn't super high quality. It wasn't cut great. It didn't have a good look to it. But if they've, you know, upped those aspects of it, then I don't think it's weird.
I don't think the jerseys sold on the Slew Barnes and Noble are gonna, I don't think they're giving anything away for the NIL store. I think that seems to be a different brand, sourced, from where they're sourcing it. But, dude, we got some weird news this week. Things got really weird this week, all across college basketball. Like a random note, for the second time this season, this college cycle, Wyoming has had their head coach hired away to be an assistant somewhere else.
And it's very late in the cycle too, right? The transfer portal has closed. I think they do reopen it for a brief amount of time if a coach leaves after the deadline. I think there is an exception for that.
But there's nobody out there.
The options are way lower than what they were before. I think that, yeah, so you're right. So Wyoming's men's basketball coach took a job as an assistant at Texas Tech, which is super weird because it's not like Wyoming is not like an NEC or like one of the Big South, one of the, like the lower level conferences, right? Like they're a Mountain West team. Like that's not a small job. And so I think there's already some talk about Sundance Wicks, who,
no, he's, I think it's official.
It is official. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So coincidentally, we talked about him last week and as being from Wyoming, and I think he was a pretty natural fit out there, but it's very weird. You're right. Like just like in women's soccer, their head coach left to take an assistant job somewhere else. And you got to wonder what's going on out at Laramie, as you said.
Yeah, that's, it's not a good, I mean, like, they, what are they going to do? How do they, can they field a team? Like, there has to be a window on coaching like departures right now.
I mean, I don't think legally there can be for like employment law reasons or whatever, but it certainly makes it more, it makes it more difficult on everyone involved.
I can't see that. That's the one thing that really kind of throws a wrench into, I mean, the transfer portal's an absolute nightmare right now, yeah, in all aspects. But if head coaches are going to move this late in the cycle.
Yeah. Yeah. The second week of May is very, very late. The people I feel bad for right now are the other Green Bay players, students, fans like that, you know, with Wicks leaving there. I mean, he did such a fantastic job this year and they're flying high. When you get to the second week of May, you don't think, oh, we're going to lose him. You know, like that's something you worry about at the end of March and beginning of April. But it's been a month since they probably were comfortable with the fact that he was coming back. And so that's, I think that's really a bucket of cold water on them. I do feel absolute, bad about them.
What a debacle.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. But it's a good question about why head coaches are leaving Wyoming to take assistant jobs. Maybe it's a coincidence, but man, that's pretty weird.
I feel like we're the only school. We're the only fan base that would be here to notice that.
Right. I know. And you and I specifically, you know, paying as much attention to women's soccer as we do.
Yes. The other very, very weird, events this week are the conference carousel, conference realignment news. Seemingly, I mean, it's not, I don't think this was out of nowhere, but as far as releasing of information goes, this came out of left field.
Yeah. And it's another one where you kind of start, like, we're starting to get into that summer period, right? Where we're like, Not really. The news you hear over the summer is stuff about like scheduling, you know, about like AAU recruiting and things like that. Like your normal summer stories in this, again, the second week of May, you're not ready to hear about somebody changing conferences, but we hear Missouri State is leaving the Missouri Valley Conference for Conference USA, and they're chasing that FBS football. And meanwhile, Grand Canyon and Seattle are heading to the West Coast Conference, which is the conference that has Gonzaga and St. Mary's. And for a little bit, it's going to have Oregon State and Washington State for the non-football sports. So Missouri State, I know you and I, not to speak for you, but to me, that's just like a Valley team to the core, right? Yes. Like I've always associated them with the Missouri Valley.
The minute Jackie Stiles became a household name in sure. the late 90s, that's when they were they are Missouri Valley.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've always associated them so strongly with that conference as like just a middle of the pack Valley program, right? And now they join a league with Florida International, Jacksonville State,
Delaware,
which is in Alabama, Delaware and Kennesaw State are both joining soon. Liberty, Louisiana Tech, Middle Tennessee, New Mexico State, Sam Houston State, UTEP, Western Kentucky. It's a very weird league. It's not like literally no programs from Conference USA from when we were there, right? Like even those bottom half teams all went to the American. The top half teams went to the ACC, the Big East. And, you know, of course, we left with Charlotte to go to the A-10, and they left the A-10. But anyway, it's a very weird league. It's pretty spread out. It's mostly like if you want to call it Southeast, that's fine. But now you wind up with Delaware, which is in a small town in I think it's called Newport, Delaware.
It starts with
It starts with an N in Delaware. It's near Wilmington in the northern part of the state. And then you go all the way out to Las Cruces, New Mexico, which is out there. Having been to New Mexico a few times, I can tell you Las Cruces is very, very far away. It's remote. The closest
we've got beef with New Mexico State still.
Do we?
I do. Cody Ellis. Yeah. By the way, did you see the Billiken Hawk Matt, who is a former manager? Mm-hmm. He's in the manager fraternity. He tweeted out, "I want to watch SEC." Well, we have SEC at home, the SEC at home, and then it's this iteration is Conference USA.
Right. That's so true. Yeah, it's funny. So I mean, like, so we've got the Grand Canyon, Seattle going to the WCC. We've got Missouri leaving the Valley for Conference USA. Do you see at all any potential ripple effects for SLU or the A-10 here?
No, I don't. I don't think there's going to be any movement until somebody leaves the A-10.
Yeah, and we do have UMass pending.
Oh, that's true. I don't know.
Like they've got, this is their lame duck season. They've got one more.
This conference is just asshole.
the Conference USA.
Yeah. You're looking at. Well, yeah, also the A-10 too, but I mean.
Well, Conference USA is just pretty weird, right? It's a weird league, and they do have FBS football, and that's really, I think, the draw for Missouri State here. So the timing's a little weird. I think people thought that Missouri State would stay put because football's expensive, especially in the age of NIL. It's just gotten a lot more expensive. The burden on alums is a lot greater, and their big alum, the one that their arena is named after, is no longer with us. John Hammond, you know, John Q. Hammond arena.
They should get John Hamm, and they can save some money on the end of the sign.
Yeah, that's right. Commencement speaker at SLU this year, by the way.
Shout out, hey John Hamm, if you want to come on the podcast.
Any open invite. I'll cancel literally anything. Open invite. But
first question. Never mind. That's too far. First question was gonna be too far.
But regardless, Zach, I think it's a pretty weird time for Missouri State to have gone. I know people knew that they were kind of looking at some different options, but I don't think they suddenly expected them to jump like this. So now, from the perspective of the Valley, if you're at 12 members, now you're going down to 11. If you want to get back to 12, I mean, who would you be making calls to?
Oh gosh. Well, they're going to need a Missouri team.
Yeah, there's no more Missouri.
I would say, I mean, Valley. Obviously, I think SIUE fits the bill. I think Lindenwood fits the bill, although they're not quite, I don't think they're quite at that level yet, but I know they're slow. I think soccer, they're probably there. I think they're right there. If we're just, because I don't think about any other outside Missouri. I think Lindenwood, is Maryville going D1? But they would, I mean, that would be then the progression, the other domino that would fall. So like Lindenwood would go to, or SIUE would go to the Missouri Valley from the Ohio Valley. And then you would see like a Maryville go D1 to the OVC or something like that. But
the OVC overall is not as strong a league as like the, I think the Horizon and
what happened to the freaking Horizon League? The Horizon League used to be dope.
Yeah. I mean, same thing that's happened to, you know, the Valley and a lot of other leagues, they just get their best programs taken. Right. I mean, Butler was the top team in the Horizon for a long time. So to give you an idea of kind of what they've lost, you know, they lost Loyola, but I'd also be looking at the Summit if I were the Valley. And I don't think the Dakota schools necessarily want to break up. I think they want to kind of stay in the same place.
Oh, that's sweet.
You've got St. Thomas there, they've got deep pockets and they've got really strong athletic programs that were at a lower level and made a big jump from D3 to D1 and have been competitive so far. You've got Oral Roberts, who I think geographically is a fit and not that far, honestly, from where Missouri State is, just Springfield to Tulsa. And so you could potentially plug them into the league, and they're always pretty solid at basketball, and they don't have a football program, so there wouldn't be a burden there.
Liberty.
Liberty is in Conference USA and they have football aspirations. Oh,
that's so, right. They are.
Yeah. So they've already moved recently from the Atlantic Sun, I believe, to Conference USA. And then you've got, I think if I'm going to look at the OVC, I think Morehead State is probably a little bit stronger than the teams that are in Missouri. If you look at the Horizon, I know people have mentioned like an Oakland or, you know, one of the teams in Michigan. I think probably half the teams of the Horizon would rather be in the MAC, but they don't have football programs or they have much smaller football programs. So I don't know. I think there's probably a few Horizon schools I would call as well. Maybe a Northern Kentucky might make sense. That could be my
Northern at Bellarmine.
Well, Bellarmine is another one. They're not in the Horizon. They're in the,
but Bellarmine for the Missouri Valley.
Potentially. Yeah. I mean, they're a fairly recent D1 addition. So I think with a lot of those kind of schools, you have to kind of see what the long-term commitment and all of that stuff looks like, but
I would love Bellarmine at some point being in our conference. Like when I think of like teams that I want to be in a conference, I think Tennessee is an untapped market.
Well, Bellarmine's in
Louisville. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
The Ohio Valley. There's an untapped market in that area.
Yeah, the Belmont to Bellarmine corridor.
Yes.
I think there are, if you look at those three leagues, I think there's plenty of phone calls you could make if you're the athletic director to kind of feel some programs out and see what, you know, at least start some initial conversations. Again, if you want to get to 12, I don't know. Doesn't the Valley play a 20-game schedule now?
I don't know.
Because if they do, 11 is actually a really good number, because then you get a natural 10-10 home and home. So I don't know. It's a really interesting move, Zach. And I don't think it necessarily is going to have a ripple effect on the A-10 or SLU, but it's always something to keep an eye on. And by the way, this is our reminder that we do not think the A-10 has to replace UMass, whose last season in the league is this upcoming academic year. I think 14 is big enough.
I would like to remind you that George Mason should be subtracted.
I won't argue with you there. If they want to kick out George Mason, then we can look at somebody else.
Two A-10 championships since they joined.
But
among all sports.
Recency bias, you know, they were pretty recent.
Should we talk Billiken basketball? We've been at this for
40 minutes.
Yeah, 40 minutes. We haven't talked Billiken basketball specifically yet.
Let's give you some basketball. It's not as much this week, but we've still got plenty to get into.
We've got a new commitment. This one, are we allowed to give the Trilly story, Trilly Donovan story at the end? Are we allowed to do that?
I think we lay off another week. Or,
okay, yeah, like, let's let this settle.
We need to let that one come out more publicly.
Okay. Kobe Johnson. Kobe. But I don't think this is one who's going to score in any way similar to Kobe.
No, different kind of Kobe. He's a transfer guard from West Virginia. Beef. With one season left to play. He visited this weekend and made his commitment official on Sunday morning. He's not a scorer, right? He's not a big time scorer. He's a tough, defensive minded player. His wingspan is over 6'8". West Virginia's website says it's close to 7 feet. Stu Durando's article says it's over 6'8". Somewhere in there, right? He's listed at 6'3 or 6'4, 210 pounds. He's got great size for a guard, no matter how long his wingspan is. He's really experienced. He's played a lot in one of the best conferences in the country, in the Big 12. And that's valuable. You know, he started 26 games this season. He does struggle to shoot from outside. And over the 31 games he played this season, 26 as a starter, he averaged 26.4 minutes, 6.0 points a game, 2.0 rebounds per game, and 2.2 assists, with a slash line of 426, 277, 789. So the 277 really stands out. He had a shoulder injury a couple seasons ago, so there's some thought that his shot may have been affected by that. His form is a little bit unusual, something that I noticed in his highlight reel, but I did notice some other things in his highlight reel. One of the things that stood out is he has a really good feel for pace and spacing. He had a nice rapport with Jesse Edwards, who's a 6'11 center for West Virginia, and they ran this play where Johnson would penetrate from the top of the key, draw some defenders, and then lob it down to Edwards, who has no one left between him and the basket. It worked for them quite a bit. He's also really strong as a ball handler, confident handling it, finishes with both hands. He's tough to stop going downhill and really knows how to use his body to get to the rim. But he's really an excellent on-ball defender. Per Stu's article, he said he was considered West Virginia's best defensive player, period, on the team. He's originally from Canton, Ohio, which isn't that far from Morgantown.
Hall of Fame.
Right. Yeah, that's right. And where my brother-in-law Dan is from. Shout out to Dan, who does
that. Shout out, Dan.
But anyways, so West Virginia does recruit, you know, Northeastern Ohio a lot. And he was the Ohio Division I Player of the Year as a senior. So Zach, he fits that bill of the impact guard who's strong defensively, that profile that Schertz has been targeting with one of the final three scholarships. So we can cross that one off the list, like I literally did in our notes this week. And that gives us two scholarships to use and two profiles that he's still going to be looking at.
Well, how are we going to fill time on this podcast once the rest of those scholarships are filled?
We're going to have to get creative, Zach.
We're going to start creative. I don't know. We're gonna
have to bring back trivia.
Oh yeah, trivia.
Line up some interviews. We've got to. We'll get.
We're
there.
Working on it. We have another walk on to in addition to Jaden Schertz. It's another Chicago prospect.
Yeah, he's from Loyola Academy in Chicago, but also kind of an Ohio prospect too. He played AAU for Midwest Pumas Gold, and he went to Loyola Academy, but transferred from Westerville Central in Ohio before his senior year. High level shooter. He's got a little bit of craftiness to his game. He was listed at 6'2" coming into his senior year of high school. But most interestingly, he's the son of Peter Patton, who's the Chicago Bulls director of player development. He was previously a shooting coach for the Minnesota Timberwolves and Dallas Mavericks. He also graduated from Loyola Academy and played at DePaul before playing professionally overseas and in some smaller leagues in the U.S. as well. So he does have a pretty strong bloodline here. His dad was, I think, known as one of the best like three sport athletes in Chicago in years when he was in high school, and then went on to play for DePaul. And I think the program was kind of a mess in those years. But nonetheless, I mean, if you're a shooting coach, director of player development at the NBA level, you're doing some things right, and your kid's going to learn some of that. So he should make for a pretty solid walk-on.
Trivia question for this week. Name the last Billiken walk-on to be a product of Loyola Academy.
Oh, is it Grant?
No, but you're close. Okay. You're right there.
Joey LePack?
Nope.
I'm in kind of the right era, roughly. Okay. All right. I can't.
You were hotter with
Grant.
With Grant. Grant, it was Brian Daly.
Brian Daly, of course. Yes. Okay.
My guy, Brian Daly. Shout out Brian Daly.
With a name like Daly, too. I should have remembered that Chicago connection.
Brian Daly rocks. Nothing on the recruiting trail really now. That I mean, we've got a couple of there was a couple of contacts this week, but not real visitors.
No, yeah, we did have some people we reached out to. I didn't put them here in the notes, but it seems like right now, to give a reminder of who Schertz is still targeting, right? So we've got that impact guard with a strong defensive game, cross it off the list. Now we need a big man to back up Robbie Avila. We need a wild card player who doesn't necessarily have to make an impact this season, but that can be anybody. It can be another big, another guard, wing, whatever. So it seems like right now, based on who we're reaching out to, the big man is what we're kind of prioritizing. But it's tough, Zach, right? Because people don't get in their transfer portal looking to go somewhere to play 8 to 12 minutes a game. They want to play a little bit more. But we know we've reached out to Ethan Lathan from
five times fast.
I know. He had been committed to Old Dominion, I think, and pulled out of that. And then we've reached out to a JUCO. I saw that today, a JUCO player. So they've got some different options. Who am I forgetting? There's somebody. There's some word that we may have reached out to Spencer Mahoney, who redshirted out at Washington State this year. I think he's about 6'9". Lathan's about more like 6'10". They're trying to find that backup center right now, and who might be willing to take on that role for
You know, I said this in the Discord, and I'm going to say it again right now. You know who fits that role?
I do, Zach. Why don't you tell us?
It's not two men in the garden stall, so we're not there yet. I think Bergeron would have filled that role.
Yeah, he might have been pretty decent at that role. I think there's a lot of aspects of his game he needs to work on, but
yeah,
you could kind of see that.
Is there really – what kind of update do we have on the visitors? It doesn't seem like any of these are going to end up being Billikens if they haven't committed already to a different school.
Yeah, a lot of names that we had heard really strong connections to SLU fell like dominoes this week, and it seemed like most of them went to Xavier, Zach. If people want to hate the school across town from me, they're going to have an easy time of it right now, because one of them was Cameron Fletcher from St. Louis, the transfer forward from Florida State. His Tuesday visit to SLU was canceled, and instead he went to Xavier and wound up committing there on Wednesday. Roddy Anderson, the transfer guard from Boise State, who we had really started to hear some strong rumors that he was heading our direction, visited SLU last weekend, but then he visited Xavier, committed there on Thursday. The comments, it makes you remember the comment from his dad. I want to say this was like right after he had visited SLU. His dad said he was still open and still getting, good offers every day. The quote was something like that. So that didn't really make you feel great. Went to Xavier, committed there. They clearly have an NIL game. Liam Campbell, high school recruit from Idaho, decommitted from USC, four-star player, visited SLU last weekend, and then committed to St. Mary's on Friday. St. Mary's was one of the schools that recruited him hard out of high school, and then who contacted him again when he decommitted from USC. He'll be a really nice fit there. They lost that Aiden Mahaney player, who was, all-conference player for them. So he should be able to step in and get some good minutes there. And then Kiki Tandy was the fourth one, the grad transfer guard from Jacksonville State, who originally played at Xavier. We think he visited SLU, or at least he was announced as someone who was supposed to visit about a week and a half ago. But anyway, he wound up committing to Florida Atlantic on Thursday. The last one that we're still kind of open on, who visited SLU and we just don't know yet, is Cameron Sheffield. He's the grad transfer wing from Rice. Can't find any news on him since the news that he would visit SLU. So I'm not 100% sure that he actually did.
Are you sure he exists?
He does exist. He didn't play last season because of an injury, and he's a grad transfer with 2 years of eligibility left. So he's kind of an intriguing player if he's healthy, but I don't know you know, he maybe is the wild card. You take him because he's kind of a wing, but he doesn't fill that that backup center role that we know we're looking at right now. So those are all the guys who will, at various points we thought might come to SLU and now aren't. But one last update, Zach, on the Indiana State signees closes the book on any Sycamore potential. And that's your guy, Robert Sean Birmingham. Did he end up going to UAB?
No, he did not, because nobody listens to Zach.
I know. I know. And they should. Everybody should listen.
Everybody.
To Zach.
I'm a genius.
That's our motto around here.
Yes. By the way, I think it's going to be super interesting to keep an eye on Xavier this year. It's going to be kind of fun to see how Roddy and Cameron do. And whether they, you know, they fit nicely into that system. I was thinking again about Cameron Sheffield and how we can't find any news on him. Did you ever hear about that Brazilian soccer player from like the 80s who just kept like using people kept like recommending him for clubs and he had never played? Like he somehow just kept faking injuries and kept signing. He kept just becoming friends with people in circles and ended up having people vouch for him all Amazing. The way to like the first division. That's, and then he finally had to play and it was pretty.
That's
quick.
A really good salesperson right there.
I would love to hear that happen with college basketball.
Yeah.
Like with the transfer portal, the way it is in NIL.
Somebody who hadn't played since like eighth grade winds up as like a grad transfer on his third program.
Yes. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
He goes to like Greenville where they let everybody on the team and just ends up playing for Duke or something. Yeah. A blue blood. Who would take a flyer? What kind of program is one of those that would take a flyer on a guy like that? Who would be the most likely Power Five to screw that up?
Oh boy. That's a good question. It would have to be somewhere where there's kind of I don't know,
Texas A&M would show its ass. Like they've got all that.
Oh, that's a good call.
They've got all that oil money.
Yeah, that's a good call. If he charmed the right booster or something.
Yes, yes. Oh, that's exactly how it happens too. It goes straight through a booster, and the coach is like, "I don't know what happened," and he's just got to be on the team.
Totally.
What are we looking at the roster? Where's the roster sit right now? You said earlier that we have two slots left. Who do we know is on this team?
So we've got 11 guys now, right? We've got two freshmen, we've got a sophomore, we've got a bunch of juniors, we've got five of them, two seniors and a grad student. So Kobe Johnson slots in as a senior guard along with Swope, Jimerson, the grad student. You've got Thames, Hughes, Avila, Casey, Anya as juniors. Dotzler is the sophomore. McCautrian.
I will never call him Dotzler. I'm sorry to him already. The freshman. It's just going to be impossible for me.
So then we've also got the two walk-ons, Jaden Schertz and Nick Patton. Josh Schertz had 15 total players on his Indiana State roster last year. So we might actually be done in terms of walk-ons. So other than those last two scholarship players, I think we have a pretty good snapshot of where the roster is. And I think when you look at this, a backup center is a natural fit. If I'm targeting any other position, I might look at like a three, you know, like kind of a wing.
A bucket getter, a guy who can break the defense down by himself if necessary.
That's right. Like somebody like that who I think, would probably fit in really nicely. Somebody you don't absolutely need this year, but would be a nice luxury. So the roster is shaping up really nicely and love what's going on here. And really, really curious to see who we're able to land with these last two spots.
And I think, again, like I said with Bruce Zhang, I think that's where you kind of sit in and you say, because we'd sit here and be like, oh, I'd really like to keep around Churchich or Bamboozle or Bruce Zhang. And I think people are like, no, they suck. Like, they're horrible. It's like, I don't want them for the role they tried to play last year. I want them for the role of sit on the bench for 32 minutes out of the game, maybe 35 minutes out of the game, just if we need you because of foul trouble.
Right.
So
yeah, that's right. I do wonder, like in a lot of these cases, like, yeah, I know people complaining about, you know, those guys got to go, they're no good. how much of that is what they were, the system they were playing in versus what they have an opportunity to play in. You know, if like, I think the first two movies I ever saw Owen Wilson in were Anaconda and Armageddon.
Wow.
And so like, I thought Owen Wilson was a terrible actor. And it was only after I saw other movies where I was actually like, oh, I really like this guy. It just so happened the first two movies I saw him in were terrible. And so like, I like, you know, Churchich, Von Bussel, all those guys, like, not playing in last year's team, what we saw last year, they might actually be pretty good players. Yeah. We just don't know yet. So yeah, I mean, I know you and I both like those guys, and
it's
been curious.
It reminds me of like when people watch the NBA and they're like, oh, this fifth guy in the starting lineup just went off for 35. Why doesn't he do that all the time? Well, I couldn't believe he'd do that. Well, yeah, he's really good at basketball. Yeah. And when given the amount of touches, but it's a little bit different because we're talking about players that aren't as good versus the really good players.
Yeah.
So, did you probably read this week's media much more intently than my illiterate ass? I did. I did try. I sounded out a few words here, Pete. I did my best.
So there was one article in particular I wanted to highlight before we talk about just Schertz's quote on the NBA, now that we're in the thick of the NBA playoffs. But the article, Zach, was on Monday the 6th. Of course it was on Monday, so I read it what feels like a month and a half ago.
By the way, Kobe Johnson is our new favorite player on this podcast, right?
Why?
Because he announced on Sunday.
Of course.
Like, he is a podcast favorite already.
He did announce on Sunday when I was literally in the checkout aisle at Kroger with both of my kids, which is, if you ever want to, the worst grocery shopping experience of your life, bring your children with you. But regardless, I happen to look at my phone and it starts buzzing and I realize like, oh, he finally committed. So the tweet I fired off this morning from our account was from the grocery checkout line. And I didn't have a whole lot of time to think about it.
Hold on, miss. I know you're ringing me up, but this is important news.
Luckily, they were still scanning the stuff for the person in front of me. So I was next in line. I was able to get that off there. But of course, you know, my kids were hanging on me in the cart and everything. But regardless, not our best, not the best timing, but the fact that he did it on Sunday is so much better than on Monday. So I agree with you there. But the article that really caught my eye last week, transfers must pass muster on and off the court for SLU coach Josh Schertz, which was Stu Durando, like we said last Monday. Zach, I thought this was really, really interesting. Schertz gauges his interest in a player based on a 15-minute video put together by his grad assistant. So he has someone putting together little videos on, like, and I know Synergy makes this a lot easier than it otherwise
would. I'm going to put together a 15-minute video. I could go back to grad school.
A video on who? Yourself?
Not Mr. Rainmaker. That's Mark Titus. Can't steal
just,
that.
Just zoom way in. Just zoom way in. So he
The ball going into the hoop. But it comes from like an impossible angle.
Yes, like an old movie or like a like when they would have a basketball scene.
Like the basketball scene in Flubber.
Yeah, of course, the first thing that comes to mind. But anyway, so he's looking for every time the player touched the ball, every catch and shoot, every drive, cut. He's looking at his ball screen, defense, rebounding. And these clips really tell Schertz whether he needs to proceed watching full games and then a deep dive into that player's character, which are the next steps after that. So at the time, a week ago, of more than 100 players that he watched in those videos since being hired at SLU, he estimates that he's eliminated 75%, which is crazy because that tells you there's
ballsy.
25 guys basically that have made it through that first cut, right? So a player might look great in video, but will he fit the system? So a recruit might consider himself a team player, but how is he viewed by those who play with him? Someone might not appear to bring baggage, but does his inner circle include some what he called potential poison? So there's a lot of other considerations that he takes after watching that video. His quote was, "You need a unified group, so we're being purposeful about the pieces of the puzzle. You're not acquiring talent, you're building a team. There's a big difference. You can get talented players, but if they're not team-oriented and possess the right competitive character, if the inner circle around them isn't right, you can completely tear away the dynamics of the team. Teams are fragile, and it just takes one or two to be outside the team, and it crumbles." So again, we have his quotes there, Zach. Very deliberate, very purposeful in building a roster. And I love this approach so much. I do feel bad for how many wasted hours his assistants, his grad assistant in particular, spends putting this stuff together only for him to say, nope, you know, right away. He's got a discerning eye. I'll give him that. The other thing this article went over was the first 10 players that we've gotten were really already known to the staff. So that's why those last three spots have been a lot tougher and why Kobe Johnson finally committing takes a lot of pressure off. Because when you think about the first 10 who passed the eye test and background check, three were already at SLU, right? Two came with him from Indiana State. And then Dotsler and the two incoming freshmen were guys that Schertz recruited at Indiana State and already knew. AJ Casey was known to Avila, and Schertz said he was in a terrible system for his skill set at Miami. And then Anya was recruited by Antone Gray, at Brown when he was an assistant there. So he had familiarity with them. So that's why those first 10 guys were actually pretty easy to go get, because they had kind of already been through this process at least once with them. Schertz said they have flexibility because they're essentially positionless after Avila, since the ball spends so much time in his hands on offense, but he still had those three wants to remaining for those last spots that we discussed last week. He did say that NIL complicates things here, and the first thing recruits ask for is how much they'll make here. Second is how much they'll play, which makes recruiting a backup center really, really challenging. He said not to expect more than one high school recruit in these last couple spots. So still a chance that we might get one high school recruit, but very unlikely we would land two. And I don't know if anything in this particular stood out to you, Zach, but I thought just the whole process was pretty fascinating to get a look at.
Yeah, I really do love how forthcoming he is and really behind the scenes. I am 100% into, like, SLU should just produce a web series, like, behind this. Just do it. Get the two Neislers to do it, just straight up produce a YouTube series,
like a Hard Knocks kind of thing.
Swear to God, 100%. Even if you have to, like, bring in a few people, like, I think you should 100% do some sort of web series. People, like, think about the I can't tell if we are in the post-golden era of sports, like, docu-series.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of them. It's a big-time market right now.
Yeah, I agree.
I really do want, like, if they do it, I would say, like, no editing, obviously. Like, what people want is to see the raw shit.
For sure.
I think they should. If this is the new St. Louis University Athletics, go all in and do some sort of series. All access.
It's a fun idea for sure.
It's expensive. I'm not saying it's you know, doable. By the way, when you're reading that article, I went looking at the roster, and I think I'm now obsessed with figuring out which players we've never had a first name before. Like, we've had a Max. I'm confident we've had an Isaiah. We have to have.
So guys, I see. Like, whose first name would be new to us, yes, ever. Yeah, yeah. I honestly, it's funny. I had that thought. I almost said Kobe Johnson's the first Kobe in program history.
He's got to be.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Gibson's obviously the first Gibson.
Yep.
Kalu Anya is probably the first Kalu. I think I'm comfortable in that. yes. Robbie... I mean, we've had a Rob. I don't know about a Robbie.
I guess it all goes back to Robert, right?
Yeah.
I
mean, so AJ, I don't know if we've had an AJ. Like, well, somebody that goes by AJ.
Somebody who goes by AJ, yeah.
Yeah. Josiah, I can't think of a Josiah.
I'm gonna have to do a control F in our record books.
Amari
on this.
I can't think of an Amari.
No, that's a new one.
Yeah. No, I don't know why I thought that was kind of fascinating to think about. Like, it's like Scorigami.
Right. Right. Yeah, first time for everything.
Shirts, watches, a lot. The NBA stuff is interesting because I'm one of those guys that isn't really big into the NBA. I'm trying with the Timberwolves right now. But I think I don't really see how it translates, but it's fascinating.
Well, so if you've read, when we were kind of reading more about him as he was hired, and he will say that, you know, for a while he had kind of robbed, you know, Bill Self's playbook, right? Taken a lot from there and kind of modified it. And then he went and spent some time with Brad Stevens in the Boston Celtics and threw it all out and then said, this is the future. Spread, five out offense. We're going spacing, we're going shooting, and we're going to this NBA style. And so it's pretty fascinating because not a lot of other coaches, and even though the game's kind of headed this direction, there still aren't a lot of guys who run that because it's just that not what they've come up in, right? So it is still fairly unique to the college game, even though I think over time, more and more people are just going to take what he's doing. But it's pretty fascinating, Zach. And his quote was, I watch teams I think are well coached and mirror our personnel. So I watch the Nuggets a ton. If Robbie wasn't my five, I'd watch someone else. The Nuggets, the Celtics, I love what they do. I think the Thunder are really creative in the way they use their big. I study what I think are the better coaches, better systems. If there's a concept I like, let's take it. I like the Kings and the way they manipulate spacing. I'm always studying and working on ways to improve what we do and to make it better. And I love that, number one. Number two, it makes me realize like what a non-basketball mind I am, because like I'm just kind of like sitting back and enjoying it a lot more and enjoying the individual performances and, you know, the just like the unique plays and things like that, but not really breaking it down on that granular level the way he does. And I'm just, I'm thrilled to hear it, number one. And number two, it makes me realize like, oh, I'm probably glad that I didn't try and pursue coaching back in the day.
No, I have zero understanding when it comes to like the real down and dirty basketball strategy. But what you don't have to have a deep understanding of to really appreciate it is Two Men in a Garden Salsa and pickles.
That's absolutely right, Zach. And I'm going to go back to the salsa this week because we did a recipe. If you're a New York Times cooking member, we did the crispy cheddar chicken taco recipe, which was on their weeknight recipes. And these turned out really well. They actually were a hit. My kids are super, super picky eaters. They went for these. They actually kind of did. Even my daughter dabbled a little bit and kind of ate some of hers, which is a miracle if she eats anything that I cook. That isn't just the same five things she always eats. But
chicken nuggies.
Yeah, no kidding. I got to say that on this recipe, they just, you know, they kind of say salsa of your choice, basically. The medium cantina style from Two Men in a Garden was perfect with the rest of the kind of flavor profile of these tacos. Again, crispy cheddar chicken tacos on the New York Times. The medium cantina style was perfect on these. It went so great with the pickled onions that are on here, the chicken and adobo, the like sort of melted cheese and corn tortilla, a little bit of lime. And it was the absolute perfect finisher for all of that. It held it together really well. And I really appreciate the cantina style. I know I've been begging for it in a hot for years, but on these, man, the medium really was perfect. So strongly recommend it if you, like me, are always looking for new recipes, trying new things in the kitchen. The cantina style goes great on just about any Mexican cooking that you're doing. So get out there, experiment for yourself. TwoMenInAGarden.com. Pick up all their products, $9.99 nationwide shipping, and you can't beat the quality.
Well, that was Pete's Kitchen segment presented by Two Men in a Garden.
The spinoff podcast coming this fall.
On the MMP network.
That's right.
Let's talk some hardball, Pete. Baseball,
let's do
baby.
It, Zach.
I watched probably the most Billiken baseball this weekend in a weekend than I've watched the rest of the season. Baseball wins 9-4 against Lindenwood. That's future Missouri Valley member Lindenwood. Tuesday the 7th. The Billikens had a 5-0 lead after three innings, but Lindenwood closed it to 6-4 in the 7th. Then in the bottom of the 8th, Chase Beattie hit a 3-run home run to put it away. Tyler Fogarty had a 2-run home run, and Drew Winters added a solo shot in the 3rd. You're going to be hearing a lot more about Drew Winters and home runs later on this week. Brendan Stressler had a 2-run single later that inning. 11 different Billikens had at least one hit. Tommy Ray started, pitched 2 scoreless innings. It was a staff game from there. Henry Littman came in and took the next 3, getting the win. Owen Chaffin, Will Bollinger, and Jack Weber combined to pitch the last 4 innings. They eclipsed last season's win total of 33 with this victory, which was their 6th in a row, heading into a massive Atlantic 10 series against the Dayton Flyers on Friday the 10th. Pete, this was a tough one.
It was a tough one. They got off to a rocky start in this series, but I'll take this and game 2, Zach, before I kick it to you for game 3. 11-3.
I actually might have some like thoughts to sprinkle in here because I did pay attention.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll leave space for those. But this one was on Friday. It was an 11-3 loss to Dayton. And like you said, it was a tough watch. Dayton scored 5 in the top of the 1st and really never looked back from there. Slew got on the board in the bottom of the 1st with a solo shot from Ethan Sitzman, who went 2-for-3 at the plate. But Dayton added 2 more in the 2nd and 4 in the 3rd, and this one was out of hand. Tyler Fogarty hit another solo shot for Slew in the 6th, and Slew added another run in the 8th. Fogarty was 3-for-5 for the game. Jackson Holmes started and only lasted 2/3 of an inning, giving up those first 5 runs. Josh Cunningham didn't fare much better. He gave up 5 in the next 1 and a 3rd. Henry Littman, though, did pitch 7 strong innings after that, giving up 1 in the 3rd when he came in, and pretty much perfect after that. Slew left 13 runners on base and committed 4 errors. And I believe, Zach, you said Hendo was also ejected from this one.
Yeah, he was ejected. This was weird because early in that five run first, a pitch from Jackson Holmes hit a Dayton player in the face. And it was wild because the umpires warned the benches. And now, like, I get it, like, warning to stop everything, but it's clearly not, he's not throwing at the guy. Clearly a very fast pitch got away from him and rode up and hit the guy in the face. Like, I think the warning has to be, you know, hey guys, like, it wasn't on purpose, but let's not retaliate, even though it was an accident. And I don't know. Right after that, Hendrickson was ejected, and I really have no idea. 3 more batters got hit in this game, so clearly the warning wasn't serious because nobody else was ejected. I don't know. This game was really bad. Just from, like, as soon as that dude got hit in the face, you're like, okay, this is one of those days. Just hope we can get to the Dayton bullpen later. And you never did, really.
Right. Yeah, well, the good news is that they responded the next day, like the only way they could have, right? And what they did is flip the score. 11-4 was the win over Dayton. Just a really nice response on senior day to put the same number on them the next day, right? Ethan Bell, Kobe Downard, Cole Smith, Knox Preston, Owen Chaffin, Dawson Smith, Luke Gasser, Harrison Dubois, or Dubois, Zach, Evan Gray, Henry Littman, Tyler Fogarty, and Dominic Cusimano were all honored. A few of these guys actually are juniors. We're not sure what the future eligibility for each of these players is, but given bonus years and so forth, you know, things are a little confusing. But that's anyway who went through the ceremony. So shout out to all those guys, seniors and some juniors. on paper anyway. But Dayton had a 1-0 lead going into the third when Drew Winters got things going with a grand slam.
This thing was massive.
Yes.
This was the biggest home run of the weekend. Like as far as distance, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Not just distance, but to clear the bases as well. And really put the momentum going Slew's way. Slew got five more in the sixth with RBIs on a single, a double, a triple, a hit batter, and a fielder's choice.
And a partridge in a pear tree.
Every way possible. Easton Richter hit a two-run shot in the seventh to help Slew match Dayton's run total from the day before. Charlie Weber was the starter. He gave up two runs in three innings. Ethan Bell got the win, pitching the next five innings and allowing one run while striking out seven. Nice outing for him. And then Jackson Yarberry gave up one run, but finished things off in the ninth. Zach, how did the rubber match go on Sunday the 12th?
Well, now you've got my monkey brain wondering, has a baseball team ever scored on with RBIs on single, double, triple, home run, hit batter, fielder's choice, walk? Like, has that ever happened? I need to know.
In an inning,
or in a game. That's so many things that might be rare for a game.
I know it's they scored in every way possible, but it made me almost when I first saw the highlight or whatever that Richter hit a two-run shot in the seventh. I thought that was in the sixth as well, and I was like, oh, did they like RBI for the cycle in one inning? Like, did they get RBIs on a single, double, triple, and home run in the same inning? But it was just one inning apart. But then I noticed, I was like, oh wait, but they did have RBIs in two other ways that inning. So it was pretty weird.
That's crazy.
But yeah, when you've got an inning like that, it's just everything's going your way.
The series finale was an 8-5 win for the Billikens on Sunday the 12th. Dayton got out to an early 3-0 lead, and I don't know about you, but I got a little nervous. You were probably doing real family things and not watching Billiken baseball. But I was a little nervous, honestly. A two-run homer, though, from Cole Smith in the bottom of the second. The next inning, it was a pair of two-run singles that made it 6-3 Billikens. The first from Richter and the second from Smith. In the fifth, it was a pair of RBI singles from Richter and Smith. Who else? To make it 8-4 Billikens. Dayton only got one more run. This poor pitcher that Slew lit up was the St. Louis kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, was it? I actually did not realize.
Yeah, the guy that, let's see, it was whoever, I think Cole Smith hit a home run off him. No. I think it was in the fifth or the sixth.
Wissman.
Yeah, I think so. He was a kid. Where did he go? Hold on. He went to.
It was Chris Pagero and then Nick Wissman were the starters that gave up all the runs.
Oh gosh, he went to a St. Charles school or something. I don't know. It doesn't matter. Anyway. Dawson Smith started and gave up those first three runs in one and a third inning, striking out two. Jack Weber came in for the next two and two thirds, spreading out five hits, giving up one run. Owen Kelly was the big kind of pitching star of this game. He gave up the last run in two and two thirds innings, pitched. Evan Gray got the save. Going the last two and one third, striking out two and allowing just one hit. But Owen Kelly came in with the bases very full and I believe got the last out of an inning, got us out of a major jam when he entered the game. The Billikens sit at 36-12 overall, 15-6 in conference play. Good for first place, Pete.
Yeah, this was a crucial series win because it puts Dayton in second by a game and a half with three games to play. So Billikens control their own destiny here, which is huge because they wrap up the regular season with a three-game series at UMass starting on Thursday the 16th, wrapping up Saturday. But Zach, I think you breezed over your footnote in this game about a pinch runner called on.
I did. Big time. Hendrickson called on Patrick Kolesi to pinch run in this game. So the return of Patrick Kolesi to action, it remains to be seen whether he'll be back for UMass, but at least he's progressed to being able to run and slide. Because, I mean, he has to be, like, I don't know what's wrong with him, but, like.
Yeah, I know this team spent a good part of the year injured, and when you put up that record, 36-12, 750 win percentage, it's massive. But if they are fully healthy going into that conference tournament, you got to feel pretty good about where this team's at.
I got my flight booked wherever we're going. I'll go.
They were picked to win the league, and it looks like they have a really good shot to do that if they can take 2 out of 3 up at UMass. The A-10 championship, by the way, is in Tysons, Virginia at Capital One Park.
Yeah, that'll be at it's where VCU plays.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be here, wasn't it? Isn't that the rumor?
You're right. I think
it was like kind of a rumor.
No, wait, Tysons, this is out by that's right by Fairfax. That's right by George Mason, actually.
Huh.
So it's up by DC.
Mm.
It's a little north of Fairfax, but anyway, they're having it kind of halfway in between George Mason and George Washington almost.
But the rumor was that they didn't they didn't have a press box, so they couldn't host it.
Correct.
It was their turn.
Right. I know. Not ideal.
By the way, speaking of ballpark upgrades, we're going to get over to softball. And one thing I noticed and I didn't mention last episode when I attended the baseball and softball games is that they did add at some point in the middle of the season padding and new foul poles to the softball field.
I think they look pretty clean too. I mean, like they had their team photo in it in front of it recently. And then you showed me a couple kind of snippets of game shots, action shots with those in the background. And it looks really nice. I really like the blue and white, the white foul pole.
Okay. So I really like the blue wall with the white run stripe. I love that. I'm iffy on the white foul pole.
I kind of like it. I think they fully committed to the look. I like it.
Yeah, I think, so I thought about this. This is what I thought about is like, it's very softball. And I mean that like lovingly. I mean that like softball is a sport where they take baseball and kind of buck the trend. It's a little more forward, more modern game, I think, like aesthetically anyway. You know,
sure.
They'll wear the color jerseys or they're a little more apt to try new things. So
yes.
I think it fits softball. It's just weird to not see a yellow foul pole.
I mean, that's always a criticism of baseball, right? Is that it's a backward looking sport, like obsessed with its own history. Sometimes at the expense of its present and future. Yeah. Whether you believe that or not is a subject for a much more sophisticated baseball podcast
I would love to see Major League Baseball teams follow this kind of format with their wall
and like get do something creative in each spot.
I
remember when they renovated Busch Stadium back in like what was that 96, the Busch Stadium 2, when they took out the AstroTurf and added grass, and the whole campaign was baseball like it ought to be, and it ought to be grass, it ought to be green walls, like that was a big part of it. Like it was all very much in the 90s baseball was obsessed with a throwback aesthetic in terms of the ballparks. And that was a big push there, but I think it's great. Like softball kind of comes across sometimes like affectionately, like it's almost the arcade version of baseball. It's like, it's shrunk in, it's shorter distances between things. It's faster moving. And you're right. They take some chances with the aesthetic and mostly I think that's pretty fun. That just makes it all more fun.
I will say I like the foul. I would like them to add some, like a little width to that foul pole, like some mesh or something.
Sure.
Because it's a little, I don't know. It's because it is white. So it's not super easy to see. So I just need a little more visibility out of it.
That's fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah. But otherwise, I do dig it. I thought I'd hate it.
Yeah.
I really thought I'd hate it because I'm a big NHL, EA Sports NHL guy. I love playing that game. And so there's like you can really get into the customization of the rim around the boards. And then with the goalposts, you can change the color of goalposts. So like that kind of stuff, like that's what that reminds me of when like the little kids will put in like pink around the boards or something silly, I guess. But no, I dig it. And again, the wall looks super clean.
Yeah.
They did add a regular season champions banner to it, which I thought was kind of funny.
Yeah.
But kind of neat. They still need to figure out a press box at both stadiums. That's a conversation for another day. Let's talk about the All A-10 awards, Pete.
Yeah, they had a few honorees. Isabel Royal, Rookie of the Year and Second Team All-Conference. Nicely done. Natalie Sullivan and Jane Kineski were First Team All-Conference. And then Royal and Abby Ilsis made the All-Rookie Team. Sullivan and Taylor Hockman made the All-Academic Team. So well done getting five players honored in there. And really, really successful. Another successful regular season, I would say.
Let's talk about their journey in the A-10 tournament. Strap in. We got a few games to talk about. First up, the Billikens dropped an 8-4 decision against 3-seed Loyola Thursday the 9th. Pete, Isabel Royal started in this one and took the loss. Loyola's first six runs were scored on her watch. I don't know. I have thoughts on this decision because I mean, Isabel Royal is, I think, unless I'm completely wrong and everybody who listens to this knows that's entirely possible. Taylor Hockman's your ace. Isabel Royal is your second. I am of the mindset. I have childhood trauma. I say you always start your ace. In the first game, regardless, I don't throw your best stuff. Leave it all out. I don't know if I like that. I don't know if I like starting your second pitcher.
Yeah, and this was a 2 and 3 seed, right? So it's not like if the 6 seed had thrown their ace the day before and won, you might be a little more apt to gamble with your number two in this one. But when you're facing a 3 seed Loyola who had the same regular season record as you, that's for all intents and purposes, that's an even game. And Loyola did beat 6 seed St. Joe's in the first round. So Taylor Hockman had to come in and finish the last four innings.
I'm wrong here, dude. Isabel Royal is, she pitched the most innings this season.
You're just looking at the stats?
Yeah.
But I mean, she's still the freshman, right? I mean, Hockman had a good starting record. I mean,
yeah, no, okay. So fair enough. My point is
they're kind of a one.
My point
one
is you throw your veteran, you know, you go with the known quantity and that's how that you go down swinging immediately. You don't.
Yeah. It's a freshman in a conference tournament the conference tournament, say what you will about, you know, being at the end of a long season and everything, is still a format that she's never thrown in before. It's a different vibe. It's a different thing. It's you know, double elimination, but the game has really come quick. You might be playing twice back to back, as we'll see they did this week. So it's pretty hectic. And I don't know. It made you question the decision based on this first game, right? So
yeah,
Loyola did beat St. Joe's in the first round. They kept up their hot play in this game. They got out to a 6-0 lead with 4 in the third, 2 more in the fourth, and it was 8-1 by the time Chloe Ryan hit a 3-run homer in the bottom of the sixth to make it a more respectable 8-4. So now SLU goes into the elimination bracket, right? One loss and you're out. And luckily, Zach, on Friday the 10th, they responded with a win.
Yeah, they did. A 5-3 win against UMass. Isabel Royal started again. You know, it's, again, controversial decision. If the game doesn't go SLU's way, you have your number two go back-to-back, or, you know, your underclassmen go back-to-back and risk two losses. Then you leave the tournament 0-2 without giving your senior a chance to win her own game. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But yeah, no, she was solid in this one. It works out in the Billikens' favor here. Didn't give up anything until the sixth, and two of the three runs were unearned due to throwing errors. The Billikens had a 3-0 lead in the third, and Chloe Ryan blew it open with a two-run double to the opposite field. Jane Kineski went 2-for-3 with a run and an RBI. Cammy Newbanks scored twice. This was odd here because the game was suspended so it was delayed due to somebody on the adjacent tennis court throwing a tennis ball over tennis balls, plural, over the fence onto the field. And the announcers are like, yeah, I think it's on purpose. Cause there's like one goes over and then they throw it back and then the other comes over and then and after a while, I guess they sent somebody over there to clear them out, or they ran out of balls.
That's I don't know. That's incredible. I that's something I could have seen happening at SLU when I was there.
Yes.
Based on the people I associated with at the time, who would do stupid stuff like that. But it's good to know that college students are still doing completely idiotic stuff like that in the year 2024.
Hey, you know what? If not there, where else? Where that's else right. are they going to do it? Yeah, they're going to be out there on the streets doing it. If you're gonna drink, you might as well do it under my roof. So it was delayed because of the tennis balls,
right?
And then it was suspended for rain. Yes. With like two pitches later,
right? And didn't the rain delay lasted what, about an hour?
Yeah, and it like went like that. It came back and then it was over like that.
Right, because they just had a few more outs to go.
Yeah, it was. I don't know. I think it was two outs maybe. But right. The Billikens held on for the 30th win of the season. This next one, Pete, was a wild, wild game. This was when we brought out our favorite one of our memes, where I believe that this game is long gone and not worth paying attention to. What happened here?
Yeah, this was great, Zach. So the winner of this game would advance to take on Dayton, the one seed, on Saturday for the title. SLU got out to a 2-0 lead after three, but Loyola tied it in the top of the fourth and then scored three in the fifth due to some really sloppy defense by the Bills. All three runs that inning wound up being unearned. And then in the bottom of the fifth, and that was, by the way, the part where you texted me. I can't remember exactly what you said, but basically, well, that's it for softball or something like that. Bottom of the fifth, Jane Kineski hits an RBI single to make it 5-3 Loyola. And then a few batters later, SLU took the lead on a three-run homer from Cammy Newbanks. Love that it was Cammy Newbanks. And needed every single one of those three runs. Natalie Sullivan hit an RBI double in the sixth to make it 7-5. And then Loyola loaded the bases with no outs in the top of the seventh, but only got one run out of it. And I know you and I were both sweating bullets at that point. So this was a high drama game, just the way this team likes it. The one run games, man. They had so many this year that didn't need to be one run games.
This happened. There they are. This happened last year too.
Yeah, it did. I remember saying that last year.
It was the like same. It was these close yeah. games, heart attack games, and also it was ugly defense. It was the exact same issue last year.
It was a lot of the same problems. Yeah.
What did I text? I texted you benefits. the gif of Ben Affleck and chasing Amy. He's like, when, Lord, when's gonna be my time? Yeah. It's like, when are we? Because you've got what? Who was it? The what? George Mason got their first ever A-10 softball. Dayton got their first ever.
Yeah.
We gotta get one.
Yeah, we're due. It is pretty crazy that this was Dayton's first. I didn't expect that because they were a really strong team this year. Really solid. And it was SLU's first appearance in the final since 2014. So that had been a while as well. But yeah, unfortunately, when we got there, Zach didn't have it on Saturday. Now, the way that the double elimination tournament works is because Dayton hadn't lost yet, SLU actually would have had to beat them twice that day in order to win. And whereas Dayton only needed to win once, and that's what they did.
And back to the meme. I texted you. I don't think they can pull out two games today.
Yes. And it was like wink, wink, which I really appreciated because, yeah, I sent it basically right back at you. Dayton got out to an early 2-0 lead, and then no one scored again until the Flyers got one more in the bottom of the sixth. Slew really just had a tough time getting off, anything off Dayton's starting pitcher, Sarah Ballots or Ballots. She allowed just 2 hits in 6 innings. She walked 3 and struck out 9. Really gave her a game in this game. And she's somebody, I think she had like an 8-7 record too, right? Like she was not their ace. I
They
don't think.
had three really nice pitchers on their roster.
Yeah. They brought in a closer for the seventh who gave up another hit, but she struck out 2 and sealed the win for him. Isabel Royal was solid again in this game. She gave up 5 hits and 3 runs in 6 innings. She just didn't get any support at the plate. Royal, Jane Kaniski, and Chloe Ryan were selected for the all-tournament team. They were all excellent overall, by the way, except for Royal's first start that we talked about in game one. But Zach, I'd say it was a pretty good season overall for softball.
Yeah, I you know what? I have a lot of trouble. Like I'll sit here and I'll lament, sloppy fielding, poor decision making, coaching decisions that I don't like. I'll lament that. But at the end of the day, I think for a team that doesn't get funding anywhere near the level they should to compete the way that they outcompete their funding, I think. And I think that's what you ask for as a fan when you can't ask for the sport to be better funded. I mean, you can, but like,
Yeah,
you know what
but
I'm saying?
you can't go out and make it happen.
Right.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And they these last 2 seasons have been really, and I'll admit too, because this is what year 12 for.
13, I think.
Okay,
Or is it? It's been a while.
For Christy Knoyer, yeah,
Yeah, she
she's
is.
been
I
there.
think she's either. I think she's on the clock, so to speak. Because I think she's
Okay.
the longest tenured. I
Okay,
think
yeah, is
Christy
that right?
Knoyer is, or maybe John Bell might be. I don't know. Doesn't matter.
Okay, yeah, so
They've
this
all
would
been
be.
there for over 10 years, all of them. But yeah.
So I'm looking up her bio, which hasn't been updated. So this is year 14 for her.
Yeah.
So she's the longest tenured coach in history. And I gotta admit, going into last year, I was kind of like, are we kind of reaching the end of the road for her? Like, but then she had the regular season championship. This year they were in the thick of both the regular season and the conference tournament, which I think is where you want the program to be.
Yeah.
And one of the notes I have here at the end here is they had just 3 players go through senior day ceremonies, and I think two of them, only two of them, can't return, right? Like Kelsey Etling, Cammie Newbanks, and Jocelyn Abbott. I think Abbott has a COVID bonus year if she wants it. The other two are grad seniors, but she's a fourth-year senior. So this is very, if they can kind of keep it intact, and I know NIL is not going to be a big factor in softball at this point. They're gonna have a lot of the same players back next year and a chance to be up in the top three or so of the conference again.
I've got a point to make.
Go for it.
If you're out there and you are like a huge Billiken fan and you have 50K to burn, you could fund a nice softball team with 50K. A lot goes a long way, or a little goes a long way when it
Yeah.
comes to NIL for these sports. So if you really like, if there was a like a Bob's Discount Furniture type guy here in St. Louis that wanted to get into like Billiken volleyball or softball and really moneyball the shit out of that sport. And I mean moneyball as in like
Yeah.
fork over, like buy players. You can
Money
absolutely do that.
Moneyball, not in how do we stretch our dollars, but Moneyball in like when an oil state comes in and buys a Premier League team at
Yes.
Moneyball. Like, let's just throw all the money at the ball.
Yes, and it's not even that much money. You can swing a large, you can swing a large hammer, we'll say, with a little bit of monetary support.
I think that's true of everything but baseball and or sorry, but basketball and football.
And I think to some extent, baseball.
at a certain tier, right? Yeah. But if you want to get into that tier,
you if can... you wanted to make the NCAA tournament every year, if you wanted SLU softball to make the NCAA tournament every year, you could do it with 250,000 easily.
Oh, I think less than that.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It would be funny if somebody like down the road was like, yeah, I heard this shit about talking about how much money it might take to do this. So I just wrote a check for $250,000 to SLU softball. no.
See what happens.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit of a track update. The NCAA West Regional preliminary rounds will be held May 22nd through the 25th in Fayetteville, Arkansas. We don't know if any Billikens made the regionals yet. I would love to go to that. Honestly, that stadium is gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
We should get SLU should build a track stadium, just like a University of Oregon, just state of the art.
I hope you hit the lottery, Zach, because you have so many ideas for all of these.
I know. Sports. Why am I not rich?
You're like, let men's basketball be funded by the people funding that. I got everything else.
Dude, I would see. No, I would, if I hit the lotto, dude, you have no idea. It would be ridiculous.
I believe it.
I would fully embrace the Mark Cuban of SLU women's soccer as they win a national championship. I would be right there, right behind the bench, like, just in like a suit, go full heel. It'd be awesome.
Yep.
Speaking of soccer, this interesting story from a couple. I feel for this guy. I feel with him on this issue here. Mm-hmm. This is a bummer. Former Billiken soccer player, and he went to St. Louis University High School as well. 82-year-old Bob Trigg. Pete, you're good at telling these stories. I'm not so great at telling these stories. So I'll hand this one over to you.
It's a pretty interesting story, Zach, because he's an 82-year-old, as you said. He went to both of the SLUs. He's a member of the St. Louis Soccer Hall of Fame, and he was evicted from his apartment because of the vape pen given to him as a Christmas gift from his grandson.
Weed vape pen. That's important.
Sure. Yes, that's right. So he was using it to help him sleep because back in February, he fell getting into bed. And when the paramedics came, they noted this vape pen on his nightstand. He went to the hospital. He was diagnosed with COVID. And when he came back home, he had a letter saying that he was evicted. And this is from the St. William Apartments in Dardenne Prairie, which is run by the Cardinal Ritter Senior Services, an arm of Catholic Charities of St. Louis. The lease specifically bans cannabis. And so the vape pen was enough for them to boot him out, right? So when he started looking for apartments, he was having trouble finding anything close to the $525 a month he paid at St. William. And the eviction lawsuit wasn't for that amount. It was for a much higher, quote unquote, market rate. So he reached out to his old classmate who goes by the name Zeus, AKA Stephen Hanlon, an attorney who has successfully brought attention to the issue of underfunded, overworked public defender offices. Hanlon had, some contacts in that space and called Brendan Roediger, who runs one of the law clinics at SLU Law, to see if there were students who could represent Trigg. And third-year law student Camila Moreno Jimenez, took the case and filed a motion to dismiss based on Missouri voting to legalize cannabis and adding it to the state constitution in 2022. So meanwhile, his SLU High class of 1959 classmates started to put pressure on the archdiocese for evicting an 82-year-old man. Their attorneys agreed to drop the eviction charges if he agreed to abide by the lease agreement going forward. So to back up a little bit, he was having trouble sleeping, right? Like that's what this all came about. He was having trouble sleeping, and his grandson who lives in Wisconsin was like, hey, I think this will help you. And it did. It worked for him. And I feel bad for the guy because he was like, I didn't even know what my grandson said it would help, and it did, and that was that. Like nothing else he was trying was helping him sleep. And I mean, man, oh man, an 82-year-old not hurting anybody. But I love that it was kind of a multi-faceted approach to getting him the help he needed. He had SLU Law come through on that side. He had his old classmates push the archdiocese and say, like, hey, you're out here to help seniors. You're out here to help people through your charities. How is throwing this old man on the street helping anybody?
Nah.
And, you know, it's just, it's all a little bit sad. It's all a little bit alarming. And you, we think of these guys. I mean, he's a St. Louis Soccer Hall of Famer. You just assume like life works out for the, for everybody. Yeah. And that's not always the case. So, really interesting story.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because you, you think about something like this, a person like this, and then you think about how that kind of situation can almost be unintentional with everybody involved, right? It, it goes down on the form that the police write down that he had a marijuana pen. And then it goes to the RSS. Nobody knows what is this guy's deal. They don't know that he's, you know, that, that, that rule is just in there because it has to be in there. I mean, it doesn't have to be in there, but it, it had to be in there when it was illegal, right? And it's one of those things where you can be like, this stuff can spiral a lot of out of control, you know, and nobody really is at fault. It's just kind of the faceless process in the whole deal. So
that's right. Yeah. No one stepped in to go, okay,
this is a real person. This is a thing.
It's not like he's selling out.
Let's figure out what's going on with this. Yeah.
Right.
Like it just, it doesn't go on that there was a weed vape pen. Like weed was present at the scene. It doesn't, you know, it may, maybe that's how to, I don't know. I'm willing to give all these people
the benefit of the doubt. Yeah,
yeah. Do we want to get into this women's soccer real quick?
How are you feeling?
I'm tired. It's all.
All right, we've been saving them for like a month. We'll save them for one more week. One more week, we promise.
It wouldn't be an interesting as part of like the preseason.
Well, we're not gonna have. Softball, we're not going to have this men's soccer
season. Yeah,
you know, like we're going to have a shorter
outline
next week anyway, so we'll give them the attention they deserve next week.
Before we head out, shout out to Jimmy Bell, by the way, former Billiken. Is he a friend of the program?
He was never on. He's just kind of a favorite, a fan favorite, podcast favorite, but He got his undergraduate degree last year in integrated studies from West Virginia, and then he just graduated with his master's from Mississippi State in workforce education leadership. And I just wanted to say, like, because I know there were reports at the time when he left SLU that academics were a problem, and now he's got two degrees. He's got a master's degree and I don't. And just want to say, like, coming up in Saginaw, Michigan, we know life wasn't always easy for Jimmy Bell, and here he is walking that stage twice, and just wanted to give him a shout out and say we are proud of everything that current and former Billikens accomplish academically. So good job, Jimmy.
Yes, that's going to do it for us this week. Thank you guys all for listening. Hit the comments section if anything we talked about touched a nerve.
Subscribe
everywhere, YouTube, podcast. Thank you all again so much for listening. We're going to line up some interviews, have some extra stuff coming for you this summer. We're excited. Thank you all for listening. Pete, go Bills.
Go Bills.